for the Transparency Oregon Advisory Commission for May 28, 2014. Senator Close is excused. It appears I only have one other member that's not here, and he was not expected to be here, Mr. Rosenfeld, so he's excused also. We will go to the first item on the agenda. Well, I guess we have a welcome. A welcome as the... let me go to the actual... Okay. But it's interesting. I have the welcome for 35 minutes.
Senator Devlin, members of the commission, for the record, Sean McSpaden, LFO staff to the commission. We informed all the other members of the typos. We captured the time frames from a previous agenda. We think we'll be able to end by 3:30. Thank you for the welcome, and our apologies for the mishap on the agenda.
Well, if I'd known that we were supposed to have 15 pages of prepared remarks.
That's right. That would have been our responsibility to provide them to you, sir. So, thank you.
Okay. Well, maybe since it's been about 6 months since we met, maybe we should just go around the room first. You just started, so Mr. Thompson.
Senator Devlin, members, I'm Dave Thompson, Public Affairs Manager for the Oregon Department of Transportation.
Joe Gallegos, State Representative, House District 30, which is Hillsboro and North Plains and a couple of houses in Beaverton.
I'm Kim Thatcher, State Representative, from Kaiser, and my area goes up to Newburg and St. Paul.
John Turpin with Legislative Fiscal Office. I assist Sean McSpaden and the staffing of the commission.
Richard Devlin, State Senator, Senate District 19.
Therese McHugh, and I'm Vice President of Financial Services with Safe Corporation.
I'm Brian DeForest. I'm the Deputy Chief Finance Officer for the State of Oregon, work inside of Department of Admin Services.
The first item on our agenda is the overview of the Oregon Transparency website update, Mr. Newton. Please proceed when you're ready.
Okay. Okay, I think I'm ready. Good afternoon, Chair Devlin, members of the Commission. My name is Gene Newton. I am an IT Policy and Planning Analyst with the Department of Administrative Services, Chief Information Office of the State Chief Information Officer. It's my pleasure to have the opportunity to brief all of you on the Oregon Transparency website and how the site has evolved since the last briefing in November of 2013. I was assigned to manage and update the Transparency website in September of 2013 after we lost two of our employees who had worked on the site since its inception. So needless to say, I was on a bit of a learning curve, and I appreciate the help that we got from those folks who left to help me get started on this. Unfortunately, my impending retirement in August means I'm going to be passing the baton to another senior analyst, Paula Newsom, who's sitting back here in the audience, for next year's refresh. So this is a one and done for me. I am working on finalizing a transparency primer to help pass on our institutional knowledge related to the transparency website to others. It's going to explain all the data that we get, who our contacts are, how we process it, what we do with it, so that institutional knowledge will continue on. I'm glad to report that the 2013 refresh was published on December 29th and 30th, as per statutory requirement, with about 99.5% of it complete. There was three or four data sets that had not come to my desk yet that I was not able to put out until January, but once I received those, the website has been pretty much complete. There's always a work in progress as we continue to update things as they come in. For this presentation, however, I'd like to focus on what is new for 2013. For the refresh of 2013. As you know, HB 2370 and House Bill 3400 were passed into law during the 2013 legislative session. Together, these two bills added some details to the data that is to be included on the transparency website. First, I'd like to talk about those new items that we added to the website as a result of these two bills. And then I'm going to share some screenshots of the website to give you all an idea of how we were able to implement that data on the website refresh. And I'll, in advance, forgive me, the screenshots are a little on the blurry side. I thought it was just my eyes, but evidently they are pretty blurry, so sorry. First, we were asked to provide a link to agency public meetings and minutes, summaries of the minutes, if the agency posted those onto their website, and many agencies do have those on their website. This was accomplished pretty easily. Actually, we leveraged, again, the data.org.gov platform, which we used to post the public meetings to begin with. We simply added a new data, data field for the URLs, and so when agencies are creating their meetings, they can simply put the URL that links to their agency minutes and summaries of meetings. So we actually implemented that back around October of last year, so it was a pretty easy fix, and we actually did it kind of ahead of schedule, but we thought it was easy enough to do. We just went ahead and moved forward. We reached out to agencies through an email blast and informed them of the new requirement and that the new data field was there in the form that they used to put their public meeting data on. And we also did some training sessions. I think we did 4 training sessions in October to help bring everybody back up to speed on the new requirement. The second thing that was required under these two bills was to provide a link to the agency administrative rules or information about those rules if they reside, again, on the agency website. So this was another URL collection process that we had to undergo. After some thought, we actually decided the easiest way to do this was to using SharePoint, which is our eGov platform. And we used SharePoint to create a form, sent that to all the agencies and asked them to fill it out. I got a memo notice, an email when it was completed. I grabbed that information on the back end, created a data set, and then we linked to that on the website. That's a work in progress. Now, as I show you the screenshot, you'll see that it's a data set that is continually updated as I continue to get those forms are sent to me. Some agencies are still sending me those. The third item was an extension of the granularity of the contract data that wanted to be put onto the website. And some of this data in 2370 and 3400 actually was already exists on the transparency website, as indicated on the slide. I've indicated which of those were. Those data elements that were not already included were added to our data dictionary, which is used to send out to all the agencies who provide data to us and informs them of the kind of data we need and how we want it formatted and how we need it sent to us. So we simply added that to the data dictionary, had some conversation with them, make sure that you know, they were on board with it, and yeah, they could get that data fairly easily, not a big effort. Some agencies did provide it, a few did not. There were a few who said no, they can't get to the information. Information on professional, personal, material contracts, that was added to the data dictionary. Data of each contract and amount payable, that was already being collected in the contract data sets that we were getting from agencies. The period contract is or was in effect, that's already included. Most of the contract data sets has a begin date and an end date, amendment dates as well, and so that's a lot of that's already there. In addition, we have a data set of expired contracts that's out there that's searchable and as well. And finally, names and addresses of vendors. The names of vendors was already included in the data we got from agencies. We did add the street and zip and city and state to the data dictionary for to collect that data. Another piece was a link, build a page for local government transparency. So we actually had a local transparency page already built on the website, but it was somewhat buried as under resources. You go to resources and you look at it, and there was a link to it. But so that web page already existed, but it was not real prominent. So what we did is added additional content to it and linked the page. Of links on the page and provided a link on our homepage with a 2013, new for 2013, and you can see that when we look at the screenshot. We have been really proactive about adding content to this page, even though the House bill said we were only needed to post it if a local government handed it to us and said, can you post this on your website? But we've been really proactive and tried to add as much content as possible, and I'll talk about that a little bit later when we get to the screenshot. Finally, enterprise zone reports, and this includes county assessor reports for both rural and urban enterprise zones. I recently received my first four reports for long-term rural enterprise facilities program that provided me from revenue. And so two of those have been posted. Two of them are being massaged so they can get posted. They weren't in very good format, so I sent it back to them, so I need this in a different format so we can post it. Oh, did I do two? Yep. So I think this slide comes to you. We present this each time because, importantly, all the work done so far and work yet to be done on the transparency website was and is to be done, I quote here, at no additional cost, using existing data and existing resources of the state agency or education service district and without reallocation of resources, end quote. That is both a guiding principle for us and a core constraint to our efforts every year. And again, I apologize for the fuzzy screens. For context, this screen shot is meant to convey the look and feel of the Oregon Transparency website in its updated form in 2013. We tried to normalize the website so it has a common look and feel across the entire site. And remember from 2012, if you looked at it, there was a page that was maybe looked like this and another page that didn't have the links at the top. And so we tried to normalize it across the entire website. So no matter which page you're looking at, you got the same navigation, you got the same stuff that you can do on the page. I think we've done a pretty good job of that, given our resource constraints. We've also worked to add additional resources and links to improve the usability of the data. It's important, you know, that we have the data out there, but it's just as important that that data is usable and accessible for people. And that's why we leverage the data.oregon.gov platform to a good extent. We get a data sets, we upload it to data.oregon.gov, we use that platform, which is the Socrata platform. It's a company that created that platform. And then we put the data out there because the Socrata platform is very robust. You can do a lot of stuff with data. You can visualize it. You can create maps with it. If there's location points, you can sort it. You can do a whole bunch of stuff. You can download the data set in seven or eight different formats if you want to get it and do stuff on your own. So it's a really robust site. So we've been using that more and more and leveraging that technology that we already have with the eGov program and using it to continue to build up our transparency site. So what I did is link to their knowledge base, because Socrata on their website has a lot of nice tutorials and videos about how to use their platform. And so I think that's a thing that will be helpful for people who are looking at this data to understand all the things that they can do to it using that platform. And that's why most of our data, a lot of the data is linked. And when you click on the link, it'll actually take you to the data.oregon.gov site. This screenshot shows the implementation that you can't barely see of the minutes summary link, and that's just to show you that this is a different view of a public meeting, and the agency has put in a web link to their meeting minutes and summaries at the bottom. And again, this is just a data field that they can add to their public meeting when they're creating the meeting. The admin rules page, this is a new page that we created as a result of the two bills. We provide links to the agency websites as well as the Secretary of State website and their administrative rules website. When the person clicks on the link in transparency, this is takes them again to data.oregon.gov. This is the data set there, and you can see it's listed alphabetically by name of agency. Person, though, could go in and sort that however they wanted to. They could sort through it and pick out some of the agencies, and I just want to see this agency's links and whatever. Agency can embed this on their own website if they would like to do that. Next slide. This is a screenshot of the contract data, which is embedded in our website. And by embedded, if everybody understands what I mean by that, that means that the data actually resides on data.oregon.gov. The master data set is there. When we put it on that website, once it's there, we make it public. And then once it's public, anybody can grab the little snippet of code that is provided by the platform, cut and paste it into their website, and then embed a view of that data. The beautiful thing about that is if this data ever changes in the master data set, all the embedded views change as well. So there's always one version of the truth out there. So if we replace this whole data set with a new data set, this would get replaced with that new data. So you don't have to worry about maintaining it. Once you embed it, it always pulls from that master data set. And again, some of the power of the data.org.gov platform that we've been able to take advantage of. This is the local government page that I talked about. This is only about a third of it. Not enough room to show the whole page because there's columns or tables down below it. We divided it between county and city. We moved the more prominent position is now linked to the home page, as I mentioned earlier. This screenshot only shows the top portion. This page currently includes links to 25 of the most populous cities and all counties. So we went out and put all the 25 top populated cities and all the counties, and then we linked to various things on their website. We linked to their websites. We have linked to their budget information, their directories if they have that. Stuff that was pretty easily available from their website, we built links to it. Again, this is a site that will continue to evolve over time as we have more resources to put into building this site and as local governments and entities start providing us more data to add to it. This is a screenshot of the enterprise zones. These are all the enterprise zone reports from the county assessor reports. These reports, again, were provided by Department of Revenue and Business Oregon. I checked with both of them, and I was glad I did because Business Oregon had two that Revenue didn't have, so I was able to hook them up as well. So in the future, that's one thing we'll make sure that we check both places that we get all of these reports. These links are actually to a PDF or a Word document, depending on the format that the report was provided to us in.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'm kind of trying to follow along, and I'm not finding that one. I'm on the website, and what's it under? Is it under tax expenditures? Okay, because
It's under tax expenditures.
Okay.
Sorry.
Oregon tax expenditures. Enterprise. Thank you.
Okay. Sorry, I'm talking pretty fast. Sorry. When the adrenaline's pumping, the mouth is running, as I say. So, let's see. I think I'm done with the slide. Yeah. As this slide indicates, for each annual update, the DAS CIO staff works with a variety of stakeholders across government and enterprise at the state and local government levels. Data is received. We have multiple contacts that we get the data from. It's uploaded to data.org.gov or to SharePoint as appropriate. It's then posted in a variety of formats on the transparency site, along with views that we can create using the data.org.gov platform. For the 2013 refresh, we worked with nearly 200 data sets and visualizations to populate the site and also checked all the links to make sure they worked, which is that's time-consuming of itself. Finally, blow our horn a little bit again. Despite the lack of direct investment in the Oregon Transparency website or the information systems that contribute data to the site, Oregon has been viewed as a transparency leader. As the slide indicates, Oregon has noticeably improved its ranking each year since 2011. Last year, we received a B+, and were rated eighth nationally within the U.S. PIRG annual following the money report. Sorry. This year, we received an A- and are now alone second nationally, and I think that's really nice for us. And that's the end of my presentation, and I'd be glad to entertain questions at this time.
Yes, Senator Close.
So I have to ask, who's number one?
Indiana.
Okay.
They were a half a point ahead of us.
Thank you.
I did actually have one question. Some of us are dealing with a new learning curve, in a sense, since Oregon Gov website has actually changed. And so when I go to the Oregon Gov website, there's obviously nothing on the first page until I learn over time what all of the pull-down and items are on it. But there is a website there that is different from Transparency, which is open data. But I can't find any way, unless I'm looking in the wrong place on this, I would have to probably look for the Department of Administrative Services.
Actually, Chair Devlin, members of the commission, somebody called me the other day about that. About a week ago, I got the same question because somebody was looking for the transparency website and couldn't find it since they changed the Oregon.gov.
Yeah.
Where they put it, it makes some sense, but it is not necessarily intuitive. But if you click on government, And that drop-down menu, if you just click on government, it takes you to a new page, and there it has transparency on that page.
So if I click on government here, and let's see. Actually, do you see it anywhere?
Chair Devlin, members of the commission, again, Sean McSpadden, it actually shows up just below open data on, if you're viewing it on a computer, you may have a different display on a mobile device.
What I'm showing is open data, then the state phone book, then state employee search, then building closures, and nothing on the Transparency Commission. And since we know many of the people now view things on mobile devices, most of them much smaller than the iPad I have in front of me, it would seem like that we try to address this. I mean, I know everybody likes to create new websites, and I do know that they went through a lot of process in the design and outreach on this website. And I do know that the website is structured largely for the needs of most Oregonians that would go to the website in the services that they would actually go there to avail themselves of. But for some of the other sort of more focused issues in terms of if you were trying to look at government expenditures or if you're trying to look at, it would seem that it would be pretty difficult on this website. Particularly, it would be virtually impossible on a mobile device,
evidently,
to find it. And unless you actually knew enough in advance to simply do a Google search for the website, which is probably asking a little bit much. And I just think we should make the door a little bit more open than that. So,
Chair Devlin, members of the commission, I'd be glad to take that back to my leadership and
oh, there it is. Now I showed
get that rolling.
Mr. Chair,
yeah.
I just Google it. That's how I found it. Took you right there.
So, any additional questions on the on agenda item number one? Seeing none, thank you very much for your presentation. We'll go on to agenda item number two, the USPERG-OSPERG reports. I'm feeling like I'm back to being the chair of rules. Aside for that, is when you're the chair of the rules, the rules committee operates in a slightly different way in the appointment process. The chair makes all the motions, and the chair has to read like 200 names sometimes that they can't pronounce, and that's where my long story here. So, Ms. Mayfrin-Swango?
Chair Devlin, members of the commission. My name is Celeste Mayfrin-Swango. I apologize for my crazy name.
You don't need to apologize, but it just brought me back, so deja vu.
So my name is Celeste Mayfrin-Swango. I'm the consumer and taxpayer advocate with OSPERG and OSPERG Foundation. OSPERG stands for the Oregon State Public Interest Research Group. We're a consumer advocacy group here in Oregon. In April, OSPERG Foundation, we released our annual report. Gene kind of gave away the punchline here, but that's okay. And we grade all 50 states on how well they make information about government spending in particular available to the public online. This is how it all kind of shook out. Oregon got ranked second in the country with a grade of A-. And as Gene mentioned before, Oregon last year earned a B+ and a B- before that, so on a upward trajectory nationally. And then here's a breakdown for how every other state did. As you can see, Indiana beat us by 0.5 points. And then our neighbors up in Washington earned a B. And then our other neighbors, California, Idaho, and Alaska, all got failing grades. So we are leading the region and the country in terms of transparency. So here's our basic sort of 10,000-foot view of the criteria that we use to grade the transparency websites across the country. So there's three main things. Is it comprehensive? Is it one-stop? And is it one-click searchable and downloadable? So comprehensive, is the web portal, does it provide residents the ability to search detailed information about government contracts, spending, subsidies, tax expenditures for all government entities? Can residents search all government expenditures on a single website? And can residents search data with a single query or browse common sense categories? Can they sort data on government spending by recipient, amount, legislative district, granting agency, purpose, or keyword? And then can residents actually download the data sets to dig a little deeper and find the information that they're looking for? And then in terms of more information on how we graded, we just passed out our transparency scorecard, so it actually has how Oregon did this year and the points that they received. And then on the back is just in-depth grading criteria and point allocation so that you can all look and see. The one thing I'll say, that first part under criteria, that first shaded area is for the state's actual checkbook. The second shaded bit is for economic development tax subsidies, and then the tax expenditure reports and extra credit were just sort of additional information. So Oregon is a leading state, as you well know. I'll say in terms of our criteria, Oregon's site is fairly easy to navigate. If you go on the website, if you can find it, hopefully, it's pretty easy to find the information that you're looking for. At first, I would say when you go on, it seems a little overwhelming to the normal member of the public, but once you spend a little bit of time on there, it's fairly easy to find what you're looking for, and the search function works pretty well. It's also comprehensive, so Oregon right now has a robust amount of information, especially around the state's checkbook, so the members of the public can see how the state is spending money. And then one of the key advancements of a lot of transparency websites across the country is giving the public the ability to download data sets and, you know, search within data sets and sort the information, so you can kind of play around with the data and find what you're looking for. One of the reasons that California scored so low is because they don't have this option. So imagine being just a normal person going onto California's website. You want to find a budget line item, but you can't search, you can't sort, and you can't download the information. It's such a daunting task, and you can really see how that would be prohibitive to people who live in California and want that information. So luckily, Oregon's site, you can do that with virtually every bit of information that's available. So that is all really encouraging. And then just in terms of what will make Oregon be number one next year, potentially, making more information available about quasi-public agencies and economic development tax subsidies. So quasi-public agencies, I'm sure you all know, they're independent government corporations whose budgets sort of exist outside of the official state budget. I think that information on quasi-public agencies is pretty difficult for the public to find. And so what a lot of states are doing is providing information about those agencies as part of their transparency websites. And Oregon has a section on the website for quasi-public agencies. I myself couldn't find it, but Sean and Jean showed me where it was earlier. And there are several agencies, but there aren't as many as there should be. So that's one area for improvement. And then the second area for improvement is providing more information on economic development tax subsidies. So this report, the Following the Money report, only looked at the five largest economic development subsidy programs in the state, because our national team put it together and they were looking at 50 websites, and so they don't have a clear picture of how many subsidy programs exist in every single state. And so as a way to kind of narrow that down, we're looking just at the five largest, with the largest sort of economic footprint. So in Oregon, that's the Strategic Investment Program, Enterprise Zones, the Oregon Investment Advantage, the Manufacturing Betsy, and Qualified Research Activities Tax Credit. So out of those five, four of those reports are checkbook level. Three can be downloaded. Four have the projected public benefits, like number of jobs created. And four provide actual public benefit, or three provide the actual public benefits. So The reality, though, is that there are more than five economic development tax subsidy programs in the state, and we actually, here in Oregon, OSPIRG, drilled down on how well Oregon is doing at providing information about more than just those five subsidy programs, but the 19 that are currently covered under the law that was passed unanimously by the legislature in 2011. And so, you know, despite the fact that Oregon graded highly in the Following the Money report, we would still say that there's a lot of room for improvement when it comes to providing information about tax subsidies. So I just wanted to go through that report quickly, just to kind of shine a spotlight on that. So again, in 2011, the legislature passed the HB 2825, which it requires that a set of information related to economic development tax subsidies be posted on the Oregon Transparency website. And this is our third year of doing a report we call Revealing Tax Subsidies, which basically takes a look at the Transparency website tax expenditure page and figures out how well is the state and the state agencies actually providing information about those. And so in the handout that I gave you, the last page is a breakdown of what that looks like. So this is from our report. So complete information, meaning information about who's receiving the subsidy, how much they're receiving, what the required outcomes are, what the actual outcomes are, and then whatever the metric was around deciding which companies could participate. That, if all of that information is provided, we consider that to be a complete report, and that taxpayers and the public could actually figure out what they're getting in terms of their return on investment through these programs. So complete information was provided for five out of the 19 programs. Six of the programs provided partial reporting, either because they're legally prohibited from providing some piece of information or for a reason that we couldn't deduce. And then three programs, three income tax programs were only tracked on the income tax form, which is protected under state law, and so that information was not made available. And then four of these programs did not provide a report on the Transparency website, and our researchers didn't figure out a reason why. And so one of the big pushes that we're doing at OSPIRG is working on convincing the governor and state agencies to be more forthcoming with the information about a set of these programs if they can legally make this information available. Because we think it's important not only for the public to have information about, you know, the state's checkbook and the money that's going in and out in that way, but also where are the places that the state's actually using the tax code to incentivize certain economic activity, and making sure that taxpayers have information on whether or not the companies who are participating are fulfilling their end of the deal, whether we're getting a good return on investment, both because they should have that information, but also so that they can be part of the larger conversation about how we're spending our tax dollars. And so I think, you know, out of all of the places where Oregon has room for improvement, I would flag this as probably the major area. So the A-minus is really exciting. Second in the country is really exciting. The folks who work at DAS and the state agencies are doing a great job with the Transparency website, and we're going to be just making sure that this is on your radar and on their radar as well. And that's all I have, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Questions from the committee? I do have just a couple of things. One, in reading the text on the report in terms of the number of areas that were not reported, and you identified the four where there was just no explanation, I would think you will be following up on that also, and I do think that we could follow up on that for our next meeting to find out what the explanation is. I mean, I'll use one as an example, maybe two. One of them would be like, well, normally enterprise zones relate to property taxes, but I guess in this case, in long term, it may also relate to income taxes. And I can see why the department can't disclose the individual income tax of someone, but they could actually, they do this all the time in other areas, they can actually identify what is occurring. I mean, they don't have to identify it by the individual taxpayer, So for an individual zone like this, if there's a long-term rural enterprise zone where people are getting income tax credits, they could reflect it in aggregate how much credits are actually occurring in that area. Now, it may be hard to do it some zones because you might be identifying the individual taxpayer if you did that. But even to have the information of just how big of an issue this is. And I think there's one of them on here that the food processing equipment used to be a very big issue and may be a big issue in the future in terms of a need in the industry. My guess is the egg processing equipment is one of those things that's actually in our tax code that is rarely, if ever, used anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there are some pretty clear explanations, but I think it's probably incumbent on this committee to follow up on some of these and find out what the explanation is for why the information isn't provided and how it could be provided. Sean.
Chair Devlin, members of the commission, perhaps Mr. Newton can confirm this when he comes up again, just prior to his next presentation. But if memory serves, the Department of Administrative Services, each annual refresh cycle, does contact each of the agencies that administer these tax subsidy programs, tax expenditure programs, and if they are not able to provide information, they're asked for the reason why. And in many cases, as Ms. Mayfriend Swango indicated, like with the Department of Revenue, it's because of confidentiality issues. In other cases, they may not collect that information. When the program was established, it did not require the level of reporting that's called for in the law, et cetera. But there is a table that I believe will be in the guidebook that Mr. Newton is going to leave for his replacement expresses some of those historical reasons why. So we absolutely can follow up with the Department of Administrative Services and those individual agencies.
I would follow up also from the standpoint that, even to provide this commission previous reports, I don't know if we may meet again before the end of this year, but obviously we're going into another legislative session in 2015. And if there's some cleanup of statutes that may need to be done, it would be good to know that a few months before the session started.
Chair Devlin, members of the commission,
please.
I also just wanted to say, I think it would be worth it in the cases where a program is inactive or that there is nothing to report to actually put that on the transparency website. So somebody who is interested in figuring out who is taking advantage of the reservation enterprise zone, they'll go online and see that, actually nobody was taking advantage of that last year, instead of trying to track it down through a public records request. I just think the transportation projects with the Department of Energy reported inactive, and I was excited to see that, the public could see this program is not active anymore, or it isn't active last year. I think that would be valuable information.
Any additional questions or comments?
Well, I do have a question.
Yes.
I noticed that you do have a good list here on the different economic development programs that you've been able to take an inventory of, and I'm imagining there's probably even many, many more, and I'm wondering how did you find these to begin with, and how would you find the rest, I guess?
Chair Devlin, Representative Thatcher, these are the programs that are currently covered under the transparency law, so that's where I found them. So these are the ones where the state agencies in statute that they provide this information.
Right.
One of the programs that was covered that we looked at under the Following the Money report, the Qualified Research Activities Tax Credit, is not covered under our transparency law, which I think is probably why the report wasn't made available to the public.
But, Mr. Chair, I guess that's what I'm trying to get at is that we've got so many of these all over across different agencies that are done that we've collected over the years as a legislature to say, hey, look at this great thing we did for economic development, and we put it on a shelf, and then the next time we meet, we do something else, and we collect all these, and we don't even know what we have, and I really think it would be great if we could figure it out, and I don't know how to do that.
Well, Representative Thatcher, a much broader list is actually this a list that's produced every 2 years, which is a report on tax expenditures.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can't actually speak to the accuracy of that report or the depth of that report, but that is supposed to actually list all of the tax expenditures that we have, and it's much broader than the report that under the Transparency Commission.
Well, I guess, Mr. Chair, it's beyond tax expenditures. I mean, there's other, like, grant programs or other things out there that are done under the title Economic Development and, you know, some sort of a government money or taxpayer money that goes into it. And that's what's really hard to get a handle on, because I've tried. I've tried through LC. I've tried through various offices, and it's difficult.
I think that's a very accurate comment, Representative. I think, too, I mean, sometimes when we've had a debate in the building here about the film credit, about converting that from a credit to just actually a direct payment. And there's some evidence that might be a better system, because what we actually do now is we give out the film credit. The film credit's obviously sold at a discount, a smaller discount than previously now. But other people benefit from it beyond the film industry, and because they just simply buy the credit. But if we were to convert it to a budgeted item, it would no longer show up as a tax expenditure also. So that's a different aspect of this. But there are things where we give grants out to people that are not going to show up as a tax expenditure. And I think you're accurate that it's pretty broad. And maybe need to get more details on the site, actually, in a sense, so people understand. Yes, Sean.
Chair Devlin, members of the commission, just for reference, the two reports that Celeste spoke about are posted on the commission website. They're good reading if you're into this kind of thing, which I certainly am. And then second, Chair Devlin, the broad tax expenditure report that you talk about, the biannual report from Department of Revenue, is also linked to the Transparency website. It's posted directly on the Department of Revenue website each biennium.
And I should say, Mr. Spaden, but Mr. Spaden is one of two IT people that LFO has, so we spend a lot of time together. So, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Celeste, I have a question about the quasi-public agencies. Not really clear to me what they're not reporting. Could you sort of enlighten us on how that could be improved specifically, things that are not being reported?
Chair Devlin, Senator Close, I would be happy to. It might be a better question for Jean Newton. I also did not put together the report, but I think that we got partial credit in Oregon for quasi-public agencies because there were some listed, but not all. There's probably 10 or so on the Transparency website. And when our researchers did a back and forth with Mr. Newton, he indicated that it was not a comprehensive list of quasi-public agencies. But beyond that, I don't know the answer to your question.
Thank you. That's helpful.
Yes.
Senator Close, Chair Devlin, members of the commission, I also believe that, again, Mr. Newton would have to confirm this, but I do not believe that the current transparency law requires reporting for quasi-public organizations. And so basically it involved Department of Administrative Services staff simply doing a general web search for TriMet, Port of Portland, a number of other programs, 8 or 9, that actually already posted either their contract or their budget information out on the internet, and we felt it certainly the Department of Administrative Services staff felt it was easy enough to link to, but currently the law I don't believe requires it.
Thank you.
Anything additional? Thank you very much for coming here today. The last item on the agenda before we get to public comment is HB 3035, Plan for Enhancing the Transparency Website. Mr. Newman.
Good afternoon again. Chair Devlin, members of the commission,
My name is still Gene Newton. I'm an IT policy and planning analyst with the Department of Administrative Services, Office of State Chief Information Officer. It's my pleasure to have the opportunity to provide the Commission with an update on House Bill 3035. This is first, I'd like to just talk about the data that House Bill 3035 mentions as needing to be part of the report, the comprehensive plan that DAS is required to do. HB 3035 requires DAS to develop a plan for providing additional data via information and or links on or before January 1st, 2015, so the plan is due at that time. Some of this data, as I mentioned earlier, is already posted on the to the website and is both searchable and sortable. For example, while the texts of contracts are not currently provided on the transparency website, much of the data on work to be performed or products or services to be provided are already included in the data that we have out there. However, caveat, the data is not always being provided consistently or in the same format between reporting entities. Much of the contract data that is on the transparency website is searchable and sortable using the data.oregon.gov platform. Regarding terms and durations of state agency contracts, again, much of the contract term duration data is already on the transparency website and is searchable and sortable by category. As I mentioned earlier, end dates, start dates, amendment dates, a lot of that is already available regarding contracts and is searchable. There's also a list, as I mentioned earlier, of expired contracts on the transparency website. This data can be accessed by the user and can be searched and or filtered by multiple categories using the capabilities of data.oregon.gov. That's the data portal. We did update, as I mentioned earlier, the data dictionary this year and requested the address, city, state, and zip of vendors and contractors be included if it was readily available, and many of those data sets now include that information. This next item, findings or determinations under the referenced ORS 279B.030 and .036 are not currently provided on the transparency website. So this will be an additional effort, certainly. Just for reference, 279B.030 deals with the agency's demonstration that a procurement will cost less than performing the service or that performing the service is not feasible. This has to do with procurements. 279B.036 deals with the determination of feasibility of procurement. Specifically, it states, and I'll just quote it, a contracting agency may proceed with a procurement if the contracting agency reasonably determines in writing that using the contracting agency's own personnel or resources to perform the service that the contracting agency intends to procure is not feasible. It's kind of some legal talk, excuse me, but that's what the ORS states. We do not gather this information at this time, and like I said, it would be some effort to find out where this information is and how we can get it to the data transparency website. Annual revenue, expenditure, and contracting and subcontracting data for school districts and community colleges, again, is not currently included in the data provided to DAS. Depending on the source or sources of that data, this one item alone could potentially add 639 data sets to our workload for the data site. And we're talking, there's 196 school districts in the state. If each one of them are giving us their contract, expenditure, and revenue data set, that's a bunch of data that will be coming in, same thing before community colleges. So this is one of the things we'd certainly be looking at and would need a plan about how to do that. We have identified stakeholders as we move forward with this effort, and there's a list of them here. We have worked with many of these entities in our data collection efforts since 2009, so we could have good working relationships with most of these folks. We would certainly have some new people on board if we did school districts, community colleges, and added those to our list as we move forward. And speaking of moving forward, in summation of this presentation, transparency continues to be a priority for the Office of the Chief Operating Officer and the State Chief Information Officer. Over the last few months, as some of you might know, the central focus of the Office of the State CIO and its limited analytical staff has been on bringing the StageGate IT project oversight process to life. And that time-critical effort, and it's been very time-critical, has displaced, at least for the moment, several other important efforts, including transparency and, more specifically, HB 3035 and our attention to that. Again, due to my impending retirement, this work is going to be transferred to Paula, and she's going to get to carry the baton for this effort as well, the HB 3035 plan. We are looking at innovative ways. There is some money allocated on HB 3035, so we're looking at some innovative ways to get additional resources for the planning stages of the effort. And some of our leadership, Barry Pack, for example, is Deputy COO, will be meeting with many of our stakeholders over the summer and to help determine the effort required and to further formalize this plan. And with that, that's the end of my presentation. I'd be glad to take any questions.
Okay. Questions for Mr. Newton? Seeing none, thank you very much for your presentation. We now have on the agenda public comment. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to address the commission? Seeing none, is there anything for the good of the order that members of the commission want to bring forward at this time?
Can I make a comment?
Yes.
I'm, of course, new to the commission, but I want to commend you for the work you've done. I think it's impressive and congratulate you on your high marks.
And Mr. Chair,
yeah.
I think the very first year we got a D, so we've really come a long way,
yeah.
And they didn't even talk about that word.
So I think most of the members of the commission would echo those remarks. So, and best of worlds in your retirement. So, anything else? Seeing nothing else, I do not know if we're going to be. I would think it might be appropriate for us to be meet in during December legislative days. So why don't we plan on that so we can get some of those reports back, and we'll check to see availability of people in those dates. And if it falls outside those dates, I'll just have to check with presiding officers to see that we can actually meet outside those dates. So with that, we're adjourned.